So we are holding on pay Dalet Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom. We started talking about yesterday. The Mishnah had talked about a case where a building collapsed, and you have people, and you have somebody under the rubble, where among other things, you're not sure if it's a Jew or a Goy, and we said then you go and dig it out. We had Shmuel telling us that you don't go in pikuach nefesh according to Ruiv. And we're so morning, Ali. We had Shmuel telling us that you don't go according to Ruiv in pikuach nefesh, which meant so we had a case where we had a case. For example, you have a bunch of people live in one chatzar, most of them goyim, one Jew. They all left and moved to they all left to another chatzar, or some of them went to another chatzar, and then a building collapsed over there. So then. So we say you don't go. So we say when only some of them left, then we say you don't go according to the. Then we say you go according to the roiv. And since the roiv were goyim, then chances are that the person who left for there was a goy, and therefore you don't do anything on Shabbos. Whereas if they all went to another chatzar, then you say that since there was a Jew among them, then there's a chance that he might be the one. Well, so you
Good
have
morning.
The expression in the Gemara had been deporish kulu and deporish mitzasayu, that all of them left or some of them left. There are actually a couple of different ways that Rishonim have to learn. We touched on that a little bit yesterday to learn what exactly the scenario is. Rashi explained, for example, that it meant that all of them went from that chotzer to another one. Now, at that point, we don't have kavua anymore. We can't say kol kavua k'mechza al mechza dummy. But nevertheless, since there's a chazaka that there was a yid there, then therefore we still work to dig it. Not really transfer the kavua, but that's where Shmuel is saying we don't go according to roi. Whereas if only some of them left, we don't know whether there was a yid in the second chotzer at all. Then we would go according to the roi. That was what Rabbi Yochanan had said. The assumption, in other words, is that Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan agree, and they're just talking about different scenarios. But now, so we're bottom of page Dalet Amud Beis, or Miyom Shmuel Hachi. Did Shmuel in fact say that you go according to Roiv when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh, that you don't go according to Roiv when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh? V'hatnan, we learn in a Mishnah, there's a series of Mishnayos in Masechta Machshirin of all places that talk about a din of what happens when you have a city that's majority Jews or majority Goyim or half and half. It comes in over there because it's related to other cases over there involving Tum of Atara. Anyway, so the Mishnah says Matzah Batinik Mushlach. If you have a city which is some Jews and some Goyim, and you find an abandoned baby over there. Im roiv kusiyim, so we say if the majority of the people in town are goyim, then we assume kusiyim really is a change by the censor. It's supposed to say goyim or nochrim or what have you. So then kusi, we assume that this abandoned child that we found is a goy. The im roiv yisrael, if most of them are Jews, then we assume that he's a Jew. Mechzal mechzal yisrael, and if there's exactly half and half, then we assume he's a Jew. Now, v'omer rav, but rav said, Now, before we get to Shmuel's opinion, let's just clarify what the Mishnah means. First of all, Rav says, this that we're saying that if it's mostly Jews, we consider this abandoned baby a Jew is only as far as lahach yosei. Rashi, there's a Rashi in Ksubas where this Gemara is also over there that says that it means, in other words, as far as giving him food, as far as giving him tzedakah. That you have a mitzvah to where you have a mitzvah to support him like you would any other yid. But to say that he's a yid with yichus, to say therefore, in other words, that if it's a girl, that a kohen should be allowed to marry her, that not because there is a chance that it is a goyish girl. And after all, then even if we're magayer her, she's gonna be a giyotis, and a kohen can't marry a giyotis. Rashi explains, in other words, now, Bechlau, the fact that the baby was abandoned, the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin, that there's the concern, even if everybody in town is Jews, there would be a concern maybe that this child is a mamzer or what have you, and that's why they abandon them. But Rashi says, the Gemara explains over there, you have scenarios where we don't have to be concerned about that. The rule over there is you can have a baby that was just abandoned and left without anything. The baby is going to die of exposure or whatever. Then we say that there's a chance that the baby is a mamzer or what have you. But if you have the baby was taken care of in a way that showed that the parents were concerned for him or her, and the only reason they put him out in the street is because they themselves are poor and they can't afford to keep this child, then we don't have to worry about them being a mamzer, but we do have to be concerned. In this case, if some of the people in town, even if most of the people in town are Jews and a minority are goyim, still this baby might be from that minority, therefore we can't allow a goyim to marry her if it's a girl. Shmuel says the relevance of that we say if most of the people in town are Jews, then this baby is assumed to be a Jew, is as far as digging up rubble if they're buried under it on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur. So we see only Shmuel is saying only if most of the people in town are Jews do we do that, but not if it's half and half. So they, and certainly not if it's mostly goyim. So what are you telling me before Shmuel that we don't go into Koach Nefesh after the Roiv? We see over here, based on Shmuel's explanation of that Mishnah, that it's not so. We do go according to the Roiv. The answer is, ki itmar b'Shmuel areshe itmar. No, when Shmuel said the word, b'chakeach olav asagal, he's actually referring to the first part of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah had said, im Roiv kusi, im kusi, that if the majority of people in this town are goyim, then we assume this baby to be a goy. Omar Shmuel in Pekuach Nefesh ain't a Cain. So Shmuel informs us, you should know, as far as Pekuach Nefesh, it's not like that. Even though there's a greater than average chance that this child is a goy, and we're going to say in a second that means, in other words, even that we're allowed to give them tray for food to eat. Nevertheless, Shmuel is saying, as far as Pekuach Nefesh, we don't assume that there is a chance that this child is a Jew, and therefore we do Pekuach Nefesh for them on Shabbos. Which means that so that Ramban talks about in that case, it could be then that the Gemara is taking back what we assumed before, that Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan agree. We could in fact say that they're disagreeing, because Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't necessarily subscribe to that, because he had talked about the case over there, again, where some people left to go from one chotzer to another, and he says you don't necessarily start digging up the rubble in that case, implying that he does go according to Roiv in such cases. Okay.
What about the Chilul Hashem? I mean, what about
we talked about in those times there was a valid reason that you would be able to give, you would be able to say, and the Goyim would accept this, that only for people who observe Shabbos do we break Shabbos, for those that not, then not. As I mentioned yesterday, Rav Moshe has a truva about it, where he says, listen, nowadays nobody's going to accept any such excuse, and therefore when there's no other alternative, for example, when there's an emergency and they need all available personnel there right now, then you do what you have to do. But we're talking about according to the original din over here. Okay. Now, by the way, let's figure out what we mean in the Mishnah when we're saying over there we have Roiv Kusiyim versus Roiv Yisrael or whatever. Im Roiv Kusiyim Kusi L'mai Hiksa. So when we say that if most people in town are Goyim, then we assume that this found baby is a Goy. According to Shmuel, who says, Rashi explains, the question is on Shmuel. If he says that you work to save his life on Shabbos, then for sure that means also that if he's poor, you have a mitzvah to give him food. So in what sense are we considering him a goy? The answer is Amar Papa L'Hachilu Nevelus. As far as that we can give him today for food. We can assume to that extent that he's a goy, and therefore we don't have to be concerned. If it was a Yiddish child, then we would say if he himself eats, then okay, Beis Din is not necessarily responsible to prevent him, but we're not allowed to give him. But because we can assume that this child is a goy, then therefore we're able to actually give him today for food. But actually has an interesting expression over here, by the way, ad she yigdav yikavol all of gerus, until he gets older and becomes a ger. It almost sounds from Rashi's wording that he's obligated to become a ger when he becomes older. And actually, so the Nitziv has an interesting discussion about that, and not everybody agrees to that. The Rambam, for example, makes no mention of such a thing. And the Nitziv writes in one of his Truvas and in some other places that maybe what it is given that we're saying, why are we saying this child is assumed to be a goy only because of Roiv, but the dinim of Roiv don't necessarily apply to goyim. So therefore, there is, after all, a chance that this child is a Jew, and he himself doesn't know. Therefore, when he gets older, he may be obligated, al pi halacha, to become a yid, to be on the safe side. Okay. What about im rov Yisrael Yisrael l'mayhu? So we said if most people in town are Jews, then the baby is assumed to be a Jew. What as far as what halacha? In other words, the question is, Rashi says, if already when it's half and half, we're saying if it's half and half, we can't give the kid nevelus because then there's an equal chance that he's a Jew as a guy. So what advantage is there? So what advantage is there if there's majority Jews that we say we for sure consider him a Yisrael? That would be lahasu la'avidasa. As far as that, if he lost something, you have to return it to him. So Rashi explains that. That would, in other words, according to Shmuel, where we said that in all cases we work on pikuach nefesh for him, and therefore lahachayosei. So now we need an extra advantage according to Shmuel, and that advantage is that we return him something that he lost. Whereas if we assumed him to be a goy, we would not. So Tosfos actually explains, the point is, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that to return an Aveda to a Goy is actually a serious Aveda, unless you're doing it in order to make a Kiddush Hashem. But where you have a scenario where it's not going to make any kind of Kiddush Hashem, then you're not only obligated to, but you're not allowed to, because then you're being mechazik. What is he going to use that money that he lost, or this object that he lost, whatever the monetary value, he's going to be using it for things that are not necessarily appropriate for a Yid. So therefore, you're being mechazik, somebody who's doing averus. So most goyim in those times were not keeping sheva mitzvahs, and therefore, yeah. So the point is that even so, if there's roiv Yisrael, then we have a mitzvah to return him his lost object. Okay, mechzal mechzi Yisrael l'mayhil. So when we say if it's exactly half Jews and half goyim, then we also consider him a Yisrael. As far as what halacha is that relevant? It's relevant as far as the dinim of nizikin. Now, the Gemara tells us in Bava Kama that you have like this. We know that if a yid's ox gores another yid's ox, that it depends. If the ox was tam, then you pay half the damages, and if it's moored, then you pay full damages. The Gemara tells us if a Jew's ox gores a goy's ox, then the Jew is potter. And if a goy's ox gores a Jew's ox, then he's chayev nezek shalom, even if the ox was tam. So the Gemara explains over there that it has to do with an idea also with Shev Mitzvah Menenoyach, because the Goyim rejected Shev Mitzvah Menenoyach, therefore Hashem, so to speak, was masking their money regarding that din. The Rambam gives a bit of a balabatish reason why we apply that only in that one case. He says because, after all, in Goyish law, they don't have a difference between tam and muad, and in Goyish law, they don't necessarily hold a person responsible for the damage that his ox did at all. My ox did it all. I wasn't there. So if a Jew's ox gores a Goyish ox, we tell him, listen, you know what, according to your own laws, the Yid won't be responsible, so you don't have a leg to stand on. And vice versa, if the guy's ox gores a yid's, we tell him, you know, according to your laws, there's no difference between tam and mord, whereas according to our laws, there is, so pay up. Anyway, so now in this case, so. I'm not sure about that. I don't remember actually whether that's the case, but yeah. Okay. He would be high of the maximum monetary punishment, but I'm not sure. I think they would also stone it, but I mean in that case would kill the person, but I'm not 100% sure about that. I guess when we get to Bava Kama in a couple of years, we'll talk about it. Bezat Hashem. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara says Heichi Dami. Okay. So what's the scenario over here? Do we mean that a Jew's ox gored an ox that belongs to this guy who was found as a child in this city that's exactly half Jews, half Goyim? And we're saying the question is whether the Yid has to pay or not. Why should we say that he has to pay? Nice raya v'nishko. Let the guy bring proof that he's a Yid and he's entitled to that payment, and then we'll pay him. That he's a Yid, because the case is a Jew's ox gored his. So he would be the one who's coming to Beis Din and saying, pay up, your ox, tam or muad, as the case may be, gored mine, so we will tell. So why should we have to pay him? Tell him, amotz mechavel avaraya, bring proof that you're a Jew, and then we'll pay you. So the answer is, loit tzricha denag chetor didan. The case is the other way around, where his ox gored a Jew's ox. So therefore, palga yohivlei. So now let's say that ox was so now that ox was attacked. So now the yid is saying, listen, you're a goy, you have to pay me the full amount. What he can do is like this: half he has to pay palga yohivlei, half he has to pay no matter what, because one way or the other, whether he's a Jew or a goy, he's responsible for that half. Idach palga, as far as the other half, neimalei. The this guy who was found and now has grown up can say, I see Raya de Labi Suralano, you want the full nezek when this ox is a tam, bring proof that I'm not a Jew, Ushkirl, and then you'll be able to get your other half. But otherwise, I maintain that I'm a Jew, and therefore therefore you can't collect the other half from me. That's what the Mishnah means. We're saying when we say that in that case where it's exactly half and half, then we assume that he's a yid. In other words, not we don't know for sure. We said that, for example, we said we don't necessarily consider him a yid, but for purposes of this particular din, we do, because it's possible that he is, and we don't know one way or the other, and the other guy doesn't have any proof. And actually, the Ritva asks an interesting question. And in that case, don't we have a case over here where he's sort of moedib amiktas? You have the he's agreeing that he owes half, and the question is whether he owes the other half. Why don't we make him pay up for that? So the Ritva talks about, because you have like this, you can say, when do you apply that? When he himself could have known, but he himself has no way of knowing either, whether right. He's a yid or not. So therefore, you don't apply that. Now, there are Rishonim who learn that that's not the case. Even in such a case, he would have to pay the other half. So they answer, so the Shach gives an answer based on that opinion, that on the other hand, the other guy is not making a tainus bori either. The other guy is not saying, for sure you're a goy, pay up. He's saying, maybe you're a goy. So that being the case, then, that's not a strong enough claim to make the other guy have to pay the other half. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, Mishan Nafal Olam Mapolis, we said that you have a case where a building collapsed on somebody, and we had three Sfekas in the Mishnah. We said, Sufik Shom, Sufik Enisham, it's a Sufik whether he's there or not, meaning whether he managed to get out alive. And Suffolk Chai, Suffolk Mess, Suffolk whether he's alive or dead, and Suffolk Kusi, Suffolk Yisrael, Suffolk whether he's a goy or a yid. So the Gemara says, my karma, what do we mean? Are we talking about that all these sfeikas? What's the chiddush of all of them? And the answer is loy miboya karma. It's a needless to say thing. Loy miboya Suffolk Husham, Suffolk Enisham. Needless to say, the first Suffolk, where we're saying we don't know whether he was whether he's there or not. I mean, and we're saying that if he's there, we know that he's still alive. Sure, demafakhan. And of course, we unbury the rubble in order to get him out. Elaf, filu, suffolk, chai, suffolk mess. Even if it's a suffolk, whether he's alive or dead, mefakhan. Then we also start unburying. The loymi boya suffolk chai suffolk mest Yisrael, and not only that, where at least we know that he's a yid, we just don't know whether he's alive or dead. El afilu suffolk kusi suffolk Yisrael mafakhin. Even if the case is to begin with, we don't even know whether it's a yid or a goy. We still do that. There is a Rishimus of the Rebbe, and Rishimus number test above. People were circulating it around last week or a couple of weeks ago in connection with the whole thing in Surfside, where the Rebbe goes into great detail analyzing Apichsidus, the story over here about this collapsed building and the various sfeikas that we have over here and various other details of the Gemara that we're coming to now. The Rebbe starts by explaining that the collapsed building represents, you have the Eibishter built a building, the Eibishter built a world, and right now it seems like a collapsed pile of rubble. Sometimes you have a person himself who thinks that the world, you know, created itself, or it's just random or whatever, doesn't realize that Hashem created it. Or you have even a person himself realizes it, but he lives in a world after the Chet Etz Hadas when everything is jumbled up and it all looks like everything is just collapsed and random. So then you have a few different possibilities. You can have the person is alive, meaning, in other words, that even within that, he still is alive, Beruchnius. So then we're saying we pull him out of the rubble. We work to unbury it and then help him re-realize and then to be poil on the world at large, that it's not a random pile of rubble, that it is a building. It is an orderly world that Hashem created for a purpose. Then you have not only that, it's even a suffix whether he's that or not. Uh, yeah, You have a suffix whether he's alive or dead or beruchni or sunat, and you still can be poil on him. And even if he might be so dead beruchni that he's possibly even like a goy nisnak rumais of la'ov of shabbat shemayim, that he acts in a way completely estranged from Hashem. Nevertheless, there still can be hope for him. And the Rebbe goes on to explain that actually in those last two cases, we're saying over here that if we end up finding that he's dead or we end up finding that it's a goy, then we don't continue unburying. So that, how does that represent an avodah? That means, in other words, in those cases, you just unburying him is not enough. You need to work on reviving him, beruchnius, because just pulling him out of the rubble, in other words, just showing him that that Hashem created the world and Hashem runs it with a purpose, is not going to be enough to get him back onto the right path. You need more than that. In fact, the Rebbe also talks about over there that you have the Gemara chooses its words very carefully over here. Between the first and the second suffix, the expression is de'isei chayhu. If he's there, then he's alive. In the second case, we say de'israel. So, in other words, the idea is that in the first case, we're saying no matter what, he is there. He's definitely there. Beruchnius, whereas we're saying in the second case, we have to stress, even though it's a suffix, whether he's actually descended to the level of a goy, nevertheless, the Yisrael, you should realize that after all, he is a Yisrael, and therefore you still have to work on not only unburying him, but reviving him, Beruchnius. It's a long, long thing, and this didn't do it justice at all. You really have to learn the Rishimis inside to get the flavor of it. Anyway, let's go on. The Mishnah had said, Matzu chai mefachin, if they find him alive, then they continue unburying him. The question is, Matzu chai pshita. Of course, if they find him alive, they continue. The answer is, Loit tzricha dafilu l'chayishah. Yeah, but the chiddush is, even if he's not going to live for very long, he's been badly injured and he's only going to survive a couple of extra minutes. Nevertheless, that chayishah is reason enough to continue being mechal Shabbos and continue digging him out. As in fact, now we're going to continue at the bottom of the Amud and going on to Amud Beis, the source in Torah, where we know that you're mechal Shabbos to save a person's life or even for suffik pekuach nefesh. One of the limudim over there is actually the idea that we say violate one Shabbos on his behalf so you can keep many others. But we're saying even when that reason doesn't apply as such, nevertheless we still do it. Okay, we said ve'imes yanichuhu. We said if he's dead, then you leave him. So the question is, Hanami Pshita. Obviously, once he's dead, what are you supposed to do for him? Why should you continue breaking Shabbos? There's no pekuach nefesh. The answer is Loit Sricha Rabbi Yehuda ben Lachish. The Chiddush is, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Lachish, D'tanya, we learn in a Braisa in a different context, Ein Matzilnas Ames Mipnei Adleika. If a fire breaks out on Shabbos and there's a dead body in that house or in that chatzah, you're not allowed to move the body to a different place because the body is Muktzah. Or you can even be talking about where the next chotzer over doesn't have. So Rashi explains the case is the next chotzer has an eruv. So the question is the problem of mukta. Now there are cases, actually, you are allowed in certain cases to move a dead body on Shabbos together with something non-mukta. For example, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos together with a loaf of bread or a child. But here we're talking about, let's say, you don't have those available. So the Tanakhama says you're not allowed to do that. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Lachish Shemaiti Shemat Silonis Ames Mpnei Adleika. But Rabbi Yehuda ben Lachish says, I heard from my Rebbeim that you are allowed to. So the point is, even according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Lachish, so Vafilu Rabbi Yehuda ben Lachish like Amar Ella. You know why he says in the case of a fire you're allowed to Ella Mitoch Shadam Bohol Al Meisay. We know that psychologically a person is usually in a panic because of their dead relative. They don't want the body to get burned up. So Eli Shorisle, if you don't allow him something that's only an Isu Dirabonon to carry the body to another chotzer that they have. They have an Eruv between them after all, Rashi learns. All it is just a matter of mukta. So if you don't allow him that heter, also l'chabuye, he may be in such a panic to save the body that he's going to forget himself and put out the fire and then be over on an Isu Daraisa. Aval hocha, but over here, Eli Shorisle, if you don't allow him to keep on digging up the rubble, my Isle the Mevad, what is there that he's going to do? There's nothing that he would end up doing that's going to be Chil Shabbos Daraisa anyway. Therefore, even Rabbi Yehuda ben Lachish is going to agree that we tell him in that case, leave the body there and you can continue digging it out after Shabbos. So that's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Ad heichan hu bodik. Up to what point do you have to search for the body? So let's say you find somebody over there in the rubble. He looks dead. He's not moving. He's not moving any limbs. So but you have to know the truth. Well, dasa emes. Here also the Rebbe shtels on that expression of Rashi, but dasa emes, and says that this also has to do with what we said before. But we're talking about a person who's buried in the ruchniistic rubble and needs to be unburied and revived over there. We need to ladasa emes. We need to be shown the truth that the Eibishter runs the world in an orderly way. So how far do we need to check before we know that he's for sure dead? Ad choytmai. So the answer is until his nose. If you see that there's no breath coming out of his nose, his nostrils, yeah. So if you see that there's no breath coming out of his nostrils, then you know he's dead. The yesh omim ad liboy. Yesh omim, you have to check until his heart. See if he has a heartbeat. Bodakum motze el yonim mesim. If you searched and you found the people in the higher levels of the rubble are dead, lo yom rukva mesu atachtonim. You shouldn't say automatically that means the people further down are automatically dead. In fact, maisa hoyo motze el yonim mesim atachtonim chayim. It once happened, in fact, that they found the people up further up were dead, and the people further down below were alive. Again, in that Rishimus, the Rebbe points out, Beruchnius as well, sometimes you have a person who seems to be even lower down might be the one who actually manages to hold on to some Ruchnius to Kechayus, whereas the one who ostensibly is higher up is the one that is in a worse situation. Yeah. Okay. Now, we're saying we have the Machlokas, whether we check until the nostrils or until the heart. Nema hani tanoi ki hani tanoi. Should we have to say that the Machlokas between those Tanoim reflect the Machlokas of other Tanoim? Tanya, we learn in a braisa, mehechan avlad noitzer, from where is a baby formed in the womb? What part of the body is formed first? Meiroshei, the head is formed first, and the head includes the nose. Shenema, as the pasuk says, mimei imi ata goizi. David HaMelech says to Hashem, from my mother's womb, you goizi. Now, the simple meaning of goizi means you drew me out, you pulled me out. But we have another pasuk that associates the word gozi with the head. Gozi nizrich vashlichi. The Navi says to the Jewish people, cut off your hair and throw it away. In other words, as a sign of avelos, that there's going to be a churban because you're not doing tshuva. So we see, in other words, that the word gozi or gozi is associated with the hair, which is on the head. Therefore, we see that mimeiniyaka gozi means you created my head first in my mother's womb. Abashol, I mean, tiburay. Abashol, on the other hand, says that the baby is formed first from its navel. And then it gives out roots in every direction, and the baby is formed that way. So in other words, on the face of it, the machloekas over here is similar. The opinion that says that you look until his nose, until his nostrils, reflects the opinion that to begin with, when a person is created in the womb, then their head and their nose is created first. The other opinion that says that you check until their heart, until their midsection, would reflect Abishol, that their midsection is created first. In fact, when we had before, there is a girsa that some of the Rishonim have, ad tiburay, that you check until his navel. So it would be the exact same machlokas. The Gemara says, no, afilu tema abashol, not necessarily. You could say even that the first opinion that you check until the nose goes even according to abashol. Ad kan like ka'amar abashol hasam elal ini yitzira. Abashol is talking about over there when a baby is first formed, the kol midi mimitzi ose mitzar. When a thing is created, when a thing is formed, the middle of it is formed first. Earlier in the Masechta, for example, the Gemara had talked about different opinions, how the world at large was created, where you had the opinion that the Eben Shsia in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is the center of the world, was created first, and then everything comes around that. So the same thing over here, it starts from the midsection. But when it comes to digging out a body and then saving a person's life, even Abishol is going to agree to that the main sign of life in a person is in his nose. As the pasuk says about the mabul, every creature that had the breath of life in its nostrils. So we see that defined as life as long as there's breath in the nostrils. And Amar Papa, Machloikas mi mata lamaila. This whole Machloikas is if you're starting from the bottom, meaning you find the person's legs first, and then you're digging towards their head. So now the question is, once you found their midsection and you found their heart and you didn't find the heartbeat, do you stop over there or do you continue going until the nose in case they're still breathing? Avam Maila Lamata, but a papa says if you find the head first and you unbury that, then given the buttock layad chaitmai, once you checked until the nose and you didn't find any breath, shuvein itzarech, then you don't need dichtiv kolash nishmas ruachayim ba'apel. Beruchnius that ever talks about the Nat Rishimus that the from above to below and below to above refers to Isarusa de la Ela versus Isarusa de la Sata. And the question is, in other words, what's the primary, where do we find the primary Ruchnius to Kechayas of a person in their heart, representing that their midis are still in good working order, or in their heart, in the sense that Moyach Shalat al Alev? And Rav Papa is telling us that if you have Isarusa de la Ela, that helps you unbury and restore this person to full Yiddish vitality, then for sure we look at the Moyach first. Only when we're going Mimata Lamaila, when we're avoid Malamata, then we have to consider do we look primarily at the Midas or do we look primarily at the Moyach in that case as well. Lahalacha, by the way, this is where this our Gemara over here is the major source for the whole discussion that they have in Halacha about brain death and other such things. At what point in halacha is a person considered dead? You have a famous question. You know, you can have a person whose brain is non-functional, but their heart is still beating. What's the din over there? Are they considered alive or dead? Are you allowed to disconnect the machines? Are you allowed to take organs from them for transplant? Our Gemara over here is the major source for that whole discussion. What the dinim about that are?
That's what Moshe said. Why do you want to choke him to death?
Something
like that.
So yeah, Moshe has various truvas about it. The Shevet Halevi has truvas. The Tzitzel Yezer. Yeah, everybody in contemporary times has something to say about it. Yeah. Okay. So now.
Most of the
right. Yeah. Most of them.
I believe so.
Yeah, most of the big poskim say that brain death is not considered death in halacha. You have, as the Gemara is saying over here, you need a cessation of heartbeat or breathing. I did see something where Moshe had a discussion about it with Tendler, and said that if there would be a way to demonstrate that the brain really is completely dead, which therefore that also controls breathing and the heartbeat and so forth, then you would have a reason to say that the person might be considered dead by halacha. Yeah.
And there's no way.
But there's no way, practically speaking, because you have a goisis, we're told a goisis, you know, a person who's on their deathbed, you're not even allowed to move them because that any little motion can be the last thing that kills them. So yeah. Okay. Now we talked about this. So we're talking about this whole idea of pikuach nefesh on Shabbos. So now, what's the source that we're allowed to do this? What's the source that we're allowed to be mechalal Shabbos for pikuach nefesh? Or even in this case, we're talking about not so much vaday pikuach nefesh, but suffik pikuach nefesh. After all, I mean, the whole point is over here, we don't know whether the person is alive or dead in there. We don't know whether it's a goy or a yid, et cetera, et cetera. What's the basis that should say that we should be mechalal Shabbos in order to potentially to save their life? So that's what we're going to discuss now. Now, we did learn a few days ago that we said that most things are overridden for the sake of pikuach nefesh, except for the zorah gilah arayis and shvichas damim. So why do we need separate limudim for Shabbos over here? So a number of the mefarshim on the Gemara over here ask that question, and they give various answers. There's a sicha in Chelek Chof Zayin where the Rebbe analyzes it and says that one way of looking at it might be to say that with other mitzvahs we say they're overridden, but in other words, lachatchila you shouldn't, as opposed to with Shabbos we would say hutra, that's completely mutter, everything that needs to be done to be mechal Shabbos for the sake of saving a person. Then the Rebbe says, on the other hand, it's not necessarily can you learn that way, because there are poskim, possibly even the Rambam, who holds that it's even dechuya. And so the Rebbe goes on to explain, the vote is that what we're saying, the reason why we need a limud over here, particularly as far as Shabbos, is to say, in other words, that it's part of the observance of Shabbos to that if the it's not, in other words, that you have Shabbos and then you have, but if a person's life is in danger, then we set aside Shabbos for that purpose. Part of the actual kiyum of the mitzvahs of Shabbos is saving a person's life, saving a yid's life if such a situation comes up. So where do we know that from? So the Gemara says, it happened once that Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah were walking on the road. The Levi Hasader, along with them was Levi Hasader. Rashi says, I don't know what Hasader means. A couple of different explanations. There's a couple of Gersois, one of them being Hasarad, meaning that he made uniforms. But another explanation, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, Hasader is he would regularly be Masader. He would arrange the words of the Chachamim into some kind of logical order so people could remember. Anyway, so he was there. The Rabbi Shmuel, b'nai Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and also there was Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Mahalchen Acharehen, this Levi and Rabbi Shmuel were walking behind them because you have the greater Talmid Chacham walking in front and they're walking behind this Talmid. Nishal Sheila Zubifnehem. And they were asked the following question, Minayim l'pikuach nefesh shedoichas haShabbos. How do we know that pikuach nefesh is doichas haShabbos? Nen Rabbi Shmuel v'Amar. So Rabbi Shmuel spoke up first and said, like this, you have the Torah tells us, Im b'machteres v'motze ha-ganav, the Torah tells us that if you catch a ganav breaking in and you kill him, then ein loy domim, then there's no guilt for blood. He's considered as though like he had no blood. He's a dead man walking. So what do we see from that? Says Rabbi Shmuel, umazesh safak al momen ba safak al nefashisba. Now, after all, this ganav is coming. He's not necessarily coming to kill. He's coming. He may only be coming to steal, and it's only a safak whether he's coming to kill. And we know how serious murder is. Ushfichas damim mitamias aretz v'goydim l'shchinish shetistalik miYisrael. Bloodshed makes Eretz Yisrael tameh and causes the Shechina to leave the Jewish people. As Rashi quotes relevant psukim from this week's parasha that talk about that, Yadom hu yachnif es ha'aretz, v'lo yisatameh es ha'aretz asher ani sheichin v'seicha, and yet nita natzilin b'nafshei. Nevertheless, because of that suffix, we're allowed to save the ganav himself from potential ritzicha by killing him. How much more so the Korach Nefesh should be Deicha Shabbos? Nen Rabbi Akiva v'Amar. Rabbi Akiva spoke up and said another way of learning it. The Pasuk says, v'chiyazid isha re'ehu v'goymer, that if one person kills another one deliberately, we say, me'im mizbechi tekochenu lamus, we take him away. If he's a Kohen and wants to come do the Avodah, we still take him away from there. We don't tell him, go do the Avodah first. We take him away from there and take him to Beis Din and judge him. Implying, though, mi'im mizbechi v'loy ma'al mizbechi. Now, the implication is only because he's next to the Mizbeach, he hasn't started the Avodah yet, do we take him away from there. But if he's already on the Mizbeach, he already started an Avodah, then we allow him to finish that Avodah before we take him away. And we allow him to finish his avoda, and only then do we take him to Beis Din to judge him. And that rule that we distinguish between whether he's about to start the avoda or actually started it is where he himself is the one who committed the crime, and we have to see whether he needs to be executed. But when it comes to keeping somebody alive, meaning suppose that we know that this Kohen knows evidence that will exonerate somebody else who's being tried and based in. Then afibu me'al mizbechi. Then even if the Kohen is in the middle of the avoda, we tell him, stop what you're doing and come to based in and give aiders. So Rabbi Akiva says, Uma zesh sofik yesh mamash b'dvarav, sofik ein mamash b'dvarav. Now when you think of it, this Kohen, we don't know for sure that the evidence that he's going to give is necessarily going to exonerate the guy. We don't know whether what he says has any mamashos to it. And v'avoida doicha Shabbos, and avoida is so important that it overrides Shabbos. Nevertheless, we interrupt the avoida for potential pikuach nefesh, for potential saving a life. How much more so that Pekuach Nefesh should override Shabbos? In other words, if Avoda is Deicha Shabbos and Pekuach Nefesh is Deicha Avoda, then how much more so Pekuach Nefesh is Deicha Shabbos? Next, Nen Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah spoke up, but Omar, and he says he was in the third way of putting it. Uma mila shehi echad mimasayim ba'avoy mashmoina evorim shvadam madach mila, which involves only one of the 248 limbs of a person, doiches a Shabbos, and yet mila bismana, that is, overrides Shabbos. How much more so saving his whole life? So Rashi explains, in other words, the point is that Mila, if Mila is not done, then eventually there can end up being a Chiyuv Koris. What it is if a person goes his whole life without having a Bris Mila, then he's Chayav Koris at the end of his life. So therefore, in other words, now doing a Bris Mila on him on the one limb saves him from a future potential Koris. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Hanano apparently doesn't like that explanation because, okay, future potential chorus, that's not what we're dealing with over here. We're dealing with Suffolk, the Koach Nefesh or whatever. And then what would be the point of mentioning it's one limb? After all, his whole body can be affected. So rather, Rabbeinu Hanano explains, you have the story with Moshe Rabbeinu in Parashas Shmos, when he failed to make a bris milah for his son, and the pasuk says, Vayifkasheu Hashem Vayivakash HaMiso, that a malach met up with him and threatened to kill him. Who's the him? So we usually understand that it means Moshe Rabbeinu. We know the famous Rashi over there that says Malach was swallowing him up. But another way of understanding it is that the baby was the one in danger. So we see, in other words, the baby himself was in danger for lack of bris milah. So Kavah Chaimah, then that regular Pekuach Nefesh is Deicha Shabbos. So those three chachamim, each of those three chachamim who were walking on the road over there, provided their own answer to this. Now we have other answers that were told, that were said at different other occasions. Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda Omer, the pasuk says es shabsoise tishmoru. The pasuk says you should keep my shabbosim. Yachol akol, you would think that applies across the board. You always have to keep Shabbos even when the Pekuach Nefesh is involved. No, Talmud Lomar, ach cholak. The pasuk doesn't just say shabsoi se tishmoru. It says ach es shabsoi se tishmoru. The word ach means to divide things up, that only in some cases do you have to keep Shabbos. Namely, not when the Pekuach Nefesh is involved. Rabbi Yonasan ben Yosef Omer, another way, the pasuk, the same pasuk continues, ki kodesh hilachem, because it is holy to you. Actually, it's a different pasuk, but whatever. Because it is holy to you, implying he misura biyadchem v'lay atem misurim biyada. You are, Shabbos is given over to you to keep. You are not given over to Shabbos. In other words, that your life, a yid's life, is more important than Shabbos. The other day, in fact, when we had the Gemara about the fact that Pekuach Nefesh is doicha most things in the Torah, Rashi explained over there the idea is a Jewish life is precious. And therefore, most mitzvahs are overridden because of it. So he was saying Shabbos is like that as well. Reb Shimon Menasseh Omer, the pasuk says v'shomru bnei Yisrael to Shabbos. The pasuk says the Jewish people should observe Shabbos, which implies omra Torah chalal all of Shabbos achas, violate one Shabbos because of him. Kadesh sheyishmer Shabbos as harbe, in order that in the future he'll be able to keep many Shabbos. Now that one, as we said before, so that one wouldn't necessarily apply if the person is, let's say, only going to live a short amount of time. It wouldn't necessarily apply, let's say, if the person, it wouldn't necessarily apply if the person is a shoita. Nevertheless, the din still applies. There are mafoshim who say that maybe Reb Shimon Menasseh wants to limit the din that Pekuach Nefesh only applies where we know that there's a chance that there's going to be Shabbos as Harbe, but the majority of mafoshim say not like that. It doesn't matter.
But there's all the other reasons.
There's all the other reasons anyway, right? In fact, interesting, earlier in the Masechta, you know, we had the story of Hillel on the rooftop over there, where on the skylight, where they take him down and they say, Roy Zeh, L'chal Olav Shabbos. So the question of wondering, Roy Zeh, any person is Roy to be Mechal Shabbos for? One of the answers is based on this, that they're saying that even if he was only going to be able to live Chaye Shah, and based on one way of understanding Reb Shimon ben Menasseh, usually we wouldn't be Mechal Shabbos for him, but somebody like that, somebody of that caliber who was Moser Nefesh to learn Torah, for him it would be worthwhile to be Mechal even for Chaye Shah, because every Chaye Shah of such a person is a tremendous thing. Okay. Amar Reb Yehuda Amar Shmuel, I havoi hosam. So Reb Yehuda tells us in the name of Shmuel, if Shmuel had been there, these were all Tanoim that are discussing. So there were a couple of generations before Shmuel. If I had been there, Hava Amina, I would have said, Didi Adifa Mididhu. I have a better limud than all of theirs. Namely, the pasuk says, V'chai Bahem. The pasuk says you should live through mitzvahs, meaning V'lo Shayamus Bahem. Mitzvahs is not supposed to be that a person should die through them, with the exception of the big. And with the exception of Shas Hashmag, etc. So the Gemara says, Omar Rabba, L'chulu Islu Pircha. As a matter of fact, actually, all of the other ones, we can find a way to slug them up. Vayimin Shmuel, the less like Pircha. Except for Shmuel's, there's no way of slugging that up. Namely, let's go through them. Rabbi Shmuel, who wants to learn it from the case of the Ganav who's breaking in, and he's saying it's a suffix. Maybe it's not a suffix. Maybe the reason why it's allowed to kill him, even though, as we said, bloodshed is such a serious thing, is based on what Rava says. My time of the Machteres, what is the reason? Usually a Ganav is not Chayiv Misa, so why over here does the Torah allow the Balabas to kill him? Chazaka, we have a chazaka that a person is not going to hold himself back when he sees his money being taken. Therefore, the Ghana who's breaking in knows that the Balabas is going to stand up against him and try to prevent him. But Omar, so he thinks to himself, if the Balabas stands up against me, then I'll kill him. And the Torah tells you that if somebody is trying to kill you, kill him first. So therefore, in other words, it's not a matter of a suffix. It pretty much amounts to a vadai. So it's based on a chazaka, and a chazaka is strong enough often to be considered like a vaday. So according to that, then it would mean right. So applying that to here, it would mean right. So if you have vaday pikuach nefesh, then sure. But when it's a suffix, like we're talking about in our mission, how would you get that from that? Next, so Vashkechan Vaday, so that's what Gemara says. So we see that that would apply to Vaday, Safik Menolon. Where would we see from that even in a case of Safik, you would apply that? Dear Rabbi Akiva Nami, we can't, Rabbi Akiva's limud also, there's a way of slugging it up. Dilma Kedabaya, after all, when we say, so what is Rabbi Akiva saying? That the Koyan is in the middle of the Avoida, and we tell him, stop your Avoida, come to Beis Din, we need you to say Eidos to exonerate this guy. Well, we said that after all, it's a suffix whether what he says is going to make any sense. Well, Dilma Kedabaya, maybe we do like what Abaya says in a different context. You have, when a person is being taken out to be executed by Beis Din, then we send along with him two Talmid Chachamim for the purpose of, let's say on the way, he himself says, you know what, I just thought of something that will exonerate me. So the Talmid Chachamim listen to what he has to say. They see, does this make sense on Pialocha? And if yes, then they tell the people, stop, let's return to Beis Din and let Beis Din hear what he has to say. So therefore, it's not a suffix. So maybe the same thing over here. We give him a pair of Talmid Chachamim, lay down Yeshmamish Bidvarav, to see whether what he's saying has any validity to it. So again, so maybe with this case of the Koyan serving on the Mizbeach, the same thing. If we have reason to think that the Koyan has evidence, we'll send two Talmid Chachamim over there, let them hear what the Koyan has to say. They'll evaluate, does this sound like something that Beis Din is likely to take into consideration? And if yeah, then fine, then come with us. Then it's not a suffix anymore, then it's a vaday. So again, Va'ashkechan vaday. So again, Va'ashkechan vaday, suffix menola. And how would we know that it applies even in a case of a suffix? And v'cholu ashkechan vaday suffik menolon. We go through each of the other ones. It only works with a vaday. Rabbi Lozman and Azariah learned from Mila. Well, only Mila that's vaday is doicha Shabbos. When you have a suffik, whether the baby was born before Shabbos or on Shabbos, then you don't do the bris Mila. The other ones also, he misura b'yedchem, chal of Shabbos achas kadesh yish meshabbos es harbe. All of those only suggest where we have a vaday that he's going to continue living and be able to keep other Shabbosim, and then you're giving and Shabbos is given over into your hands. Where do we get by all of them? Suffolk menolon, or the Shmuel vaday less like pircha. But when it comes to Shmuel's, when the pasuk says asher yasa oisa ma'odim b'chai b'hem, then it's clear that it means even there shouldn't even be a suffix. It shouldn't even be that doing mitzvahs can lead to a suffix of that the person might have to die. Therefore, we see that yes, you do your machal Shabbos even for a suffix. So therefore, vadei less like pircha, there's no way of schlugging up Shmuel, and therefore that's the best living. Amar Ravina b'tamer of Nachman Yitzchak. This is like the expression tava pilpalta charifa. Tava choda pilpalta charifta. One sharp pepper is much better mimaloit sana dekari than a whole basketful of pumpkins. In other words, like this, you have the pumpkins, the great chachamim, the tanoim. All of them have things that we can slug up, and then you have one tiny little peppercorn, and the taste of it overpowers all of those giant pumpkins. In the same way, the Shmuel, who's a much lesser caliber Talmid Chacham, because he's an Amora compared to tanoim, and yet his limud is the one that's unimpeachable. The last Mishnah of the Masechta. Now we've been talking about the whole Masechta, the Avodah of Yom Kippur, the Dinim of Yom Kippur. Now let's talk about the Yom Kippur is the time of Tshuva. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva, it's a mitzvah for everybody to do Tshuva on Yom Kippur. So now let's talk about Tshuva. The Mishnah says, Chatas v'oshem badei mechakrin. a chatas or an oshem vaday are mechaper for a person's averus. Most of the mafarshim say it means with tshuva, although the Shagas Arya in Gvura Sari wants to say that maybe not. Maybe a chatas is mechaper even if the person is not fully doing tshuva. Let's say he didn't say vidui for his avera while he's bringing the curtain. Anyway, so so a chatas by definition is brought for a shogi, with a couple of rare. Well, Shem Chanuk has an osham. So what you have is okay. You have like this. There's two types of chatas, and then there's osham. The most averus that a person does, he brings a chatas for, is a fixed chatas, a female sheep or a female goat, and those are only for things that he does with shogi. Then you have there's a type of chatas called a korban ola v'yored, where the trumas mikdash v'kodshav and certain other, and then a shavuos bitui and some other ones. There are one or two of those that you do bring even for a mazid. And then you have an osham. You have the various ones, asham zelos, asham meilos. Many of them are brought for things that are mazid as well. Okay, so all of those. So those are mechaper. Misav yemek kippurim mechaperin imatshuva. When a person dies. At or when Yom Kippur comes, then such things are mechaper together with tshuva, meaning Yom Kippur by itself, or the person dying by itself is not enough to give him kapara, there needs to be tshuva. For example, in connection, we were just talking about people who are executed by Beis Din, the Mishnah tells us in Sanhedrin that before the person is executed, they tell him, say vidui, and that way your death will be a kapara for you. We'll learn in the Gemara, Bas Hashem. We'll learn tomorrow what kind of things require what kind of kapara. What things is enough? Is tshuva enough? What kind of things do you also need your kippur? What kind of things is there also misa? The Mishnah continues, tshuva mechaperas al averus kalis. Tshuva by itself is mechaper for lighter averus, meaning al esev al loiseseh, for eses and for loiseseh. We'll see in the Gemara what kind of eses and what kind of loiseseh. As far as more serious averus, and we'll define in the Gemara what the more serious ones are, who toila tshuva by itself suspends his punishment ad sheyavi yom kippur mechaper until Yom Kippur comes and accomplishes the complete kapara. So in other words, for those more serious averus, there's a two stage thing. There's tshuva, and then there's also you need Yom Kippur as well to be mechaper. The Alter Rebbe explains in Igeres HaTshuva in Perek Aleph that the idea is because on Yom Kippur you're lifnei Hashem, you're like on a higher level even than Shema Vaya, and therefore that's able to take care of even more serious averus, which in other words within Shema Vaya, within Seder Ishtalshel, there'd be no way to deal with such things, but because you're going l'mayla m'Shema Vaya. The Meiri, on the other hand, actually says a little more of a balabatish thing. He says, practically speaking, the average person only reaches a high level of tshuva on Yom Kippur. But in principle, if a person were to reach that high level throughout the year, then sure, it would be mechaper for him right away. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. If a person says repeatedly, I will do an avera and then I will do tshuva, Ein maspikin biyodei lasas tshuva. Hashem does not give him the opportunity to do tshuva, which the Alter Rebbe explains in Igeres HaTshuva and various other mafarshim before him explain similarly. It doesn't mean he can't do tshuva. It means Hashem won't give. Usually, Hashem gives a person opportunities to do tshuva. Here, Hashem won't provide him those opportunities. But dochak v'nichnas, he pushes his way in and does tshuva. Then ein l'chadava im rufnat tshuva. On the other hand, the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva seems to say a little differently. The Rambam writes that there's 24 cases where a person is prevented from doing tshuva, and among them is Echtav Ashuv, where, in other words, that Hashem like hardens his heart, like you have by Pare and whatever, and makes it more difficult for him to do tshuva.
Still even
according to the Rambam, if doch benichnas, he can still make his way in, right? And the idea is because the fact that there exists tshuva is itself what's causing him to do the avera. Therefore, how can Hashem give him an opportunity to do tshuva? Why it repeats echad? You can't be mechav. You can't have the kapara of Yom Kippur if you're violating Yom Kippur itself, right? So we'll see in the Gemara also why the double expression, why he says echad v'ashuv, echad v'ashuv. So actually, yes, the Gemara is going to say, because that hints at the idea that once a person does an Aveda twice, then he feels already like something that's mutter to do. But with that said, though, there are some Mephoshim that point out, if he were to do this only once, maybe it wouldn't be so bad, because then maybe he's doing it in order to have the opportunity to do the mitzvah of tshuva. After all, a person has to fulfill all the mitzvahs. One of them is the mitzvah of tshuva. So then he could get away with it. But once he does it twice, then he doesn't have that excuse.
Don't try it at home.
Yeah. Next. Echtav Yom Kippur Mechaper, if the person says, I will do the Aveira and Yom Kippur will clean it up, and Yom Kippur Mechaper, then again, Yom Kippur is not Mechaper because, again, the fact that he's doing the Aveira because he thinks he can get away with it because of Yom Kippur, and then next, Averis Shemin Adon Lamokam Yom Kippur Mechaper, when a person does Averis between him and Hashem, then Yom Kippur is Mechaper for those. But Averis Shemin Adon Lachavere, in Yom Kippur Mechaper, Adhi Yiratzes Chavere. For those, Yom Kippur is not Mechaper until he appeases the other guy and asks Mechila. And the Mishnah continues, Dora Shem Elozim and Azariah. In this connection, Rav Elozim and Azariah darshan in the Pasuk. When it says, Mikor Chatesechem Lefnei Hashem Titaru, from all of your Averis before Hashem you will be cleansed. So the Lefnei Hashem goes on Mikor Chatesechem. Averis from an unlamakim yamakapur machaper, Averis from an unlachaber, any yamakapur machaper, Adchi Yirat says chaberoi. So therefore, we see from that, from the fact that it says Lifnei Hashem, that only the Averis Lifnei Hashem are cleaned up by Yom Kippur, but the ones Lifnei chaberoi, you need that as well. Omer Rabbi Akiva finishes off, and on the face of it, Rabbi Akiva is just finishing off with a piece of Agadah over here about Shuvah, but there are actually, we'll talk in a second, it's possible that he's referring back to what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying. He says, Ashreichem Yisrael, happy are you Yisrael, lifnei mi atem mitarim, before who are you cleansed of your Averis, mi mitareschem, who is actually cleansing you, none other than Avichem Shabashamayim, your father in Shamayim, Hashem himself. As the pasuk says, I will sprinkle on you pure water, and you will become clean. But Omer, you have the Alter Rebbe brings in Tanya the idea, like you have like the king or like the mother over there who lowers themselves to clean up their child's filth. That's how it is when Hashem is cleaning up the filth of our Averis. But Omer, and also the pasuk says, Mikvi Yisrael Hashem. Literally, in the simple meaning of the pasuk mikveh over there means the hope of the Jewish people is Hashem. But he's davening it moloshin mikveh, as in a mikveh that you toivo in. Mam mikveh mataris atameim, just like a mikveh purifies people who are tamei. Af hakadosh baruch hu mataris Yisrael, the same way Hashem purifies the Jewish people. Where the comparison to a mikveh, there's a couple of different angles on that. One is when a person tovels, they have to tovel completely in the mikveh. We know if even one hair sticks out, then the tevilah that doesn't work. The same way when a person is doing tshuva and a person is reconnecting to Hashem, it can't just be, well, I'm only sort of reconnecting to Hashem. You gotta put yourself into it. There is something though. I think it's someplace in a sicha that the idea, on the other hand, what if you have, for example, a person has many different averis, and right now they don't feel strong enough to do tshuva for all of them. Right now, a person is just feeling, I'll do tshuva for some of them. Nevertheless, the same way as, for example, you can have a person is tamei with many, let's say a person can be tamei mess, as well as tamei from a sheretz, let's say, and he tovels in the mikveh, and that takes away the tumas sheretz. He's still tamei mess, but it still is effective as far as the transfer. Let's say, for example, he was tamei as a zov or what have you, and he tovels, so that helps with that, even though he's still tamei mess. The same way, a person does tshuva for some of his avedus, then that itself is acceptable, and then he'll do tshuva for the other ones later on when he feels more able to do that. Now, there is some of the Mephoshim say that actually Rabbi Akiva may be disagreeing with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is telling us that Averis bein Adam l'chavera, you need to be Miratzes Chavera, and without that, it's no good. Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, is saying, listen, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you're taking the word Lifnei Hashem and attaching it to the word Mikol Chateseichem, that only Mikol Chateseichem Lifnei Hashem, only your Averis in front of Hashem, Kitoru, will you be cleaned up. No, actually, we should say that Lifnei Hashem refers to the Titaru, before Hashem you cleanse. So there isn't necessarily that distinction, or at least he's not going to say that if a person did an Avera ben Adam l'chaveiro, he does not ask Mechila. But he's going to say, in other words, when you think of it, a person does an Avera ben Adam l'chaveiro, there's also an Adam l'mokum component to it. So therefore, if he does Tshuva on that part, then that part will be taken care of. Yeah, the ben Adam l'chaveiro part, he's still going to have to pay the guy back and appease him and so forth. But yeah. When we say over here the expression "lifnei miyatim mitarim mi mitareshem," the Tosfos Yom Tov says it refers to two different kinds of people who do tshuva. You have the people who are able to do it under their own power, lifnei miyatim mitarim, before whom are they becoming tar? And then you have the people that they don't have the strength to do it on their own, and the Eivishter helps them out. That's a mi mitareshem, and Hashem works on being mitar them. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. When we say in the Mishnah, Chakats v'osham v'adei mechaperin, what do you mean? Osham v'adei ein osham toloi loy? You're telling me an osham toloi is not mechaper? V'akaparek sivavei. Doesn't the pasuk, when it describes a person bringing an osham toloi, it also says that he has kapara? The answer is, the difference is, hanach mechapri kapara gmura. The difference is that a chatas and an osham bring a complete kapara. Oshem Toli, Eina Mechapa Kapara Gemara. An Oshem Toli is not a complete Kapara. All it is the case of an Oshem Toli is, for example, let's say the classic case is a person had two pieces of chaylev in front of him, and he ate, or two pieces of fat, rather. One is chaylev, one is shum, and he doesn't know which is which. He ate one, the other one got lost, and now he's not sure whether he did the Avera. He brings an Oshem Toli, but if he, all that does is it suspends his punishment, but if he ever finds out that the one he ate was chaylev, he is going to have to bring a chatas. Therefore, in that sense, the Oshem Toli is not a complete kapara, unlike when a person brings a chatas or an Oshem Vaday, then that's it. His kapara is over and done. Inami, or another possibility, the difference is Hanach ein acher mechaper kaparosan. The difference is when a person needs a chatas or an Oshem Vaday, there's no substitute for it. There's nothing else that would accomplish the same kapara. Oshem Toli acher mechaper kaparosan. Another reason the mission doesn't mention an Oshem Toli is because there's something else that can accomplish the same thing. The Tanan, as in fact we learn in a Mishnah in Krisus, Chayove Chatois Vashamis Vadoyin, Sha'ova Alein Yom Kippurim. If a person was Chayav Achatas or an Oshem Vaday, and Yom Kippur passed and he hadn't yet brought the carbon, Chayovin, they're still Chayav to bring the carbon, but Ashamis Tloyin, but if he's Chayav and Oshem Tolui, and Yom Kippur passed, Peturin, then he's Potter because Yom Kippur itself is Machaper for that potential, for that possible Aveda that he did. So therefore the Mishnah is not mentioning Oshem Tolui because it's not always a given that a person has to bring an Oshem Tolui. Where it is a given that if a person did something that makes him chayav, a chatas or an Oshem Vaday, that he's going to have to bring that and there's nothing else that can accomplish the same kapara. Okay. To be continued tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Shkoyach, everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi.